Hey, Pants, we have a problem.
What is it?
Somehow you overbooked the nose. You've got four panelists and there's only three seats.
So we bumped somebody. Let's read down the list. Kinky Friedman.
No, that way too big of a star.
Melanie Quintana.
She'll probably make it about race.
Rebecca Castellani.
She's probably going to start screaming, "This is like The Handmaid's Tale" or something.
What's that?
It's this book she read. She reads books like all the time. It's weird.
That leaves Jim Chapdelaine.
Yeah, that's the one. Bump him.
But people love Jim Chapdelaine.
Okay, he's an aging rock star. Who's he going to complain to? Country Joe and Fish?
I don't know who that is.
Exactly.
This seems so heartless. Even the Nazis didn't bump people.
The Nazis totally bumped people. The Nazis did like every bad thing. Why are people suddenly saying they didn't?
Okay, let's go get him.
Okay, Grandpa, we need that seat.
Hey, what are you doing? I have to be here. I'm mixing a Rita Wilson concert today and she needs me.
Tell somebody who cares. Grab him.
Ow! Ow!
Is that Jim Chapdelaine that you can't
do? Can I get some ginger ale?
Don't resist, Jim. It just makes you bleed out faster.
Country Joe and the Fish are going to hear about this.
You were right.
Of course I was right. Let's put him in the green room next to Matt Damon. It's time for the nose. And now, last seen rifling through Dr. Dow's carry-on for prescription meds, Colin McEnroe.
Actually, I've started an alt rock band called Dr. Dow's Carry-On. Yeah, we just had to do that, obviously, and we will be talking about that. But first of all, let me tell you who we are talking with. It's, you know, we do consider all the people who come on the nose to be celebrities. But they're celebrities, and then they're celebrities. And we have some celebrities here today. They're in town. They wanted to do the nose with us. How could we possibly say no? I'm very excited to have with us Kinky Friedman, singer, songwriter, novelist, humorist, politician, ran for governor of Texas one time, not too long after W was governor, I believe. Your slogan was, "How hard could it be?" And Rebecca Castellani, she's that person who reads all those books. She's a scholar of modern literature, and she is part of making the whole Kinky Friedman thing happen tonight and tomorrow night at Bridge Street Live in Collinsville. That's where Kinky is going to be performing for the next two nights. And you can get tickets for that, by the way, at 41bridgestreet.com. And so Rebecca's part of that. She's part of the Collinsville entertainment industry, which is legendary, of course. And then Melanie Quintana, you may have just heard us mention Melanie Quintana. Who is Melanie Quintana?
She's the mom who started a social media revolt against the surging price of EpiPens. Melanie Quintana is an actress who lives in Brooklyn, New York. She has appeared in the hit HBO series The Night Of and played a doctor in the CBS series Limitless.
Her people just showed up with that clip. They said, "Look, you have to play it or she's not coming on." No, that's actually that. She was on Inside Edition. That was from Inside Edition.
Was from Inside Edition.
You were spotted canoodling with Harry Styles. And they just did a whole feature about it.
The funny thing is, they had called my agent and I was just like, "You know, Ricky, I don't want to do it. I'm not going to do it." And so we told him she's not going to do it, and they clipped that all together themselves. Put that all together themselves, without me.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, obviously, this is a pretty picked over and talked over topic. It's happened on Sunday night. It's been part of the news conversation for days and days. So it's not really like our favorite thing to do on the news is to talk about something that people have already been talking about. But there's something unescapable about this story. There's something unescapable about the story of Dr. Dow and his United Airlines flight. I don't even think I really have to set this up for you. Most people know about this. This man who was bumped and he refused to leave his seat. And somehow or other, this story is still going. I wonder why that is. You know, Kinky, one thought that I had is, there are a lot of stories in the news where we can't imagine ourselves as participants in the story. We can't imagine that. I mean, there's like, for example, just to take a grim example, there was a horrible killing in San Bernardino almost at the same time as this United story broke. But we can't imagine that happening to us. Somehow, we can imagine being the guy sitting in the plane and having somebody want us to get out of our seat and something horrible happening, right? If you can put yourself in the person's shoes, it's a more interesting story.
Yeah, well, why it's happening is because we have a cultural ADD, and a song or a movie or anything will only stick around while it's trending. I know nothing about anything to do with the internet or anything technological. I have a typewriter, and the E key is going out, and that's a problem. I'm trying to finish this deal. There's a biography of the Kinkster coming out in November by Mary Lou Sullivan of Connecticut, and she did a book on Johnny Winter. So just not to get away from this guy for a minute, but so they asked me would I write the introduction, and like any self-absorbed, can we say the word? Can we blink anything or? We can't. Right?
We own a dump button, but we try not to use it.
Like any self-absorbed a-hole, you know.
I agreed
to. I jumped at the chance to write the introduction to my own biography. Why am I talking? Oh, because of the E key. So the E key finally went out, and when that happens in America, you throw the whole damn typewriter away. If you know what a typewriter is, that is, you have to throw it out. And I like to say that at least I'm grateful that I'm not E.E. Cummings. As far as this guy is concerned, he's still trending, apparently.
Right. Yeah.
As long as it's trending, I mean, what a sick system. Can't we just look at a situation like this? We're fascinated by this guy. I'm interested because United Airlines has spent millions on their publicity and friendly skies and whatever the hell they do. And here this comes along, and you get a real glimpse at who they really are, maybe. Maybe the mask fell a little bit here.
Right. And I think, Rebecca, you and Melanie had similar reactions that it's not just that we can imagine ourselves in this situation, but this world suddenly looks familiar, right? It somehow or other matches something that we think is happening, that the world isn't as nice right now.
Yeah. Well, the image of him being dragged against his will, trying to fit him down that little aisle, and he's not quite fitting seamlessly, seemed to me a bit like a metaphor for politics in the U.S. right now. I mean, here's someone that purchased his ticket, he did everything right, and yet he's still coming up against an authority figure that's telling him, actually, no, this is the way it's going to be. Whether you come quietly or kicking and screaming, or whether we have to drug you or bash your face in, this is how it's going to be. So, yeah, I do feel like this story has stayed in the groupthink consciousness of the world because it does sort of have this metaphorical quality to it to sort of sum up the state of the world right now, which is not super.
Yeah, right. It actually reminded me of that scene in Incorporated, which I think was canceled, but it was actually pretty good.
This is a show on the Sci-Fi Network?
Yeah, and someone had some sort of illegal tech, but he had actually done nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's being drugged. And it's like reminiscent of, like, you know, yeah, dystopian nightmare television show.
Except it's real.
Right. Whereas, you know, here's a person who's an individual who supposedly would have a right to get a product that he had purchased. He had purchased a product with certain expectations, and that the corporate interest and that another person was deemed more important than him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he had to succumb to, like, the corporation. I think that's sort of the dynamic that I feel like echoes with people right now, from the EpiPen thing, from, I feel like public policy itself is not for us anymore. And I feel whether it's a visceral feeling or it's actually people going and saying, hey, there needs to be public policy where they can't oversell the tickets. On some level, people are perceiving that it is, you know, corporations are people now, but then we're feeling like the actual people aren't people anymore, just the corporations.
That's a good point, yeah.
And so I think that's part of what's playing out here. And like you said, you can't getting shot randomly, although it could happen, doesn't feel as intimate and real to our everyday experience.
Right. That's just
like
something
that
we see every day. And I mean, to that point, I do think that not that things like this happen all the time and have always happened all the time, but actually one thing I suggested to Kinky, it turns out he hasn't played it in a while, so he's not going to do it when he gets around to singing.
I can't remember the damn.
Yeah, that's right. But you have a song called We Reserve the Right to Refuse Service to You, you know, that's not a new song. It's an old song for you. And it's about this phenomenon in a way, you know, that all through history, people have been treated shabbily in various retail contexts and worship contexts. The difference is everybody except you has a camera right now. I mean, the difference is now you see things that you didn't used to see.
Well, there's another factor here. The guy's a doctor. And I have a series of rapid fire, a montage of rapid fire medical jokes that come from my shrink, Willie Nelson. And every joke Willie now tells begins with, guy goes to a doctor. So I think that's significant. We could try one or two of them out real quick. An example would be, a guy goes to a doctor, and the doctor says, I got bad news for you. You've got AIDS, and you've got Alzheimer's. And the guy says, well, at least I don't have AIDS.
Okay. I actually have heard that one before.
And the second one is, a guy goes to a doctor, and the doc says, got bad news for you. You got 6 months to live. The guy takes out a gun and shoots the doctor right there in his office. They gave him 20 years.
All right, so Dr. Jokes from Willie Nelson. But, you know, one of the things that I was thinking watching this, okay, so you see this horrible spectacle unfold, and here's this man, this doctor, and he's bleeding from the mouth, he's being dragged out, and you do hear this chorus of disapproval and distress from these people, you know, what are you doing, look what you're doing, look at this poor man. And the people who are doing this are some form of police officer, so it's not necessarily something where you could. I started wondering, what are your moral obligations?
Yeah, somebody should have said, let's roll.
Really?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Come on, this is wrong.
It's like the bystander effect. Everybody can take out their phones and snap pictures, but who is the person standing up out of their seat and saying, wait a second, like, this is wrong? That nobody did that.
But there's only so much power you would have as a passenger. Like, you're doing the one thing you have the power to do. I, as a diminutive person of color, am not going to challenge an officer of the law in any way, shape, or form. And so...
No, it's precisely like a tiny hijacking.
It's the only thing you can do is to take
it.
Is to witness it, to document it. And in some ways, that fear of being taped, we should hope or should kind of make people behave better. It doesn't seem to be working out that way.
No. I don't know. I think that is the case. I think people do, in some cases, behave better because they know they're either about to be taped or they see the phone there or they understand that. I mean, there's also just sort of a blindness about that builds up in people, too. And
right.
I also think when people get into the, you know, what Cesar Millan, the dog trainer, calls the red zone, something shuts off. You know, that thing saying, oh, somebody might be filming you with their phone right now. That voice does not get heard anymore.
I think a lot of times the phone can really make things worse, too, because the second, you know, somebody's being belligerent and then you take out the phone, it adds in that additional element of belligerence. Well, you better stop filming me, that, you know.
Right. It
wasn't
does.
There
I've
before.
Seen that.
Yeah, you see that a lot with, you know, road rage incidents where someone starts filming the person that's attacking them and they get increasingly infuriated with the presence of the phone. So.
And actually, the ACLU has an app where you can, if you're taping and someone demands your phone, you can shake the phone
and
it would immediately send your tape to
the ACLU.
Oh, that's to the ACLU.
I want to get that app.
Yeah.
So, Melanie, I was going to ask you, too. Uh-huh. I mean, obviously, this is a very different thing. You became a crusader for EpiPens and against price gouging.
Right, quite accidentally,
Quite accidentally. But I'm picking up the New York Times one morning, and there you are on page one. I'm going, I know her. I'm saying to my significant other, look, I know her. And then Inside Edition is making up a montage, and I don't know what else happened. But, I mean, so you became, although you're not unfamous, you became famous in a really different way. I don't know, would you have any advice for the Dow family? Did you experience enough out of that?
I would. At first, I was indiscriminate at who I spoke to. I think Canadian television and immediately the tweets and the contacting my agent came out, and, you know, talk to who you want to and trust who you'll trust after a couple days, because they're going to write the story anyway, and they're always going to quote the primary source, and they're going to write the kind of story they want with the kind of narrative they want. I think mom got mentioned in like almost every single article. Like, I could throw my daughter into a vat of peanuts with eggs and shellfish, and she would emerge unscathed. She's allergic to nothing.
Yeah.
I just thought the price gouging was wrong. And so...
And your husband's allergic.
He has a swelling condition. We were traveling, and so out of an abundance of caution, because we're going to be like in the mountains, just the two of us, for our anniversary in California and on a plane, the doctor said, oh, you know, I'm going to prescribe an EpiPen for you. It's in the box, still with a wrapper. He hasn't even done the testy thing. And we paid $5 as we paid a $5 copay. Yeah. Whereas a friend of mine here in Connecticut, you know, was paying $600. And so that's kind of our discussion is what inspired it. Right. And
Kinky, by the way, has a song called I Have a Swelling Condition, but I'm kind of hoping that he will not play that song.
And I think, and so people, but it was a convenient narrative to be like, you know, the terms of endearment mom yeah. out there. And so people will paint their own narrative. So it's, I think it's important. To mm-hmm. just talk, yeah, I talked to the Connecticut Mirror and the New York Times and just called it a day.
All right. Do you have an EpiPen with you? If any of
I
us?
Do not.
Right, no. You don't have an, after all that?
I don't have any kind
I
of
feel
condition.
Like they should send you a bunch of them for being their new ambassador.
I felt so safe they, with
they
you
were
coming
recalled.
In here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Kinky, it is kind of getting maybe time for you to sing us a song, but not I Have a Swelling Condition. although that, there might be something
it's
there.
Like, worst first date lines.
Okay. Well, this Kiki Freeman is putting on his guitar right now.
Yeah, this happened, Colin. This is one night I'm at the ranch at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the phone is ringing, and it is Willie Nelson, who has become my shrink pretty much. And he said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm watching Matlock." And he said, "Well, that's a sure sign of depression." He said, "Turn off Matlock. Turn it off and start writing, Kinky. Start writing." And I hadn't written a song in 40 years. So I wrote 12 songs, kind of inspired by Willie. And one of them I'm going to play for you now. And then I call Willie back. Mm-hmm. This is just a few months ago. Call him back. I said, "How you doing, Willie?" And he says, "A little up, a little down, you know, the usual." And then he said, "By the way, Kinky, what channel is Matlock on?" So here's the first of the Matlock collection.
Right.
And this is a true incident that involved me. It's called Jesus in Pajamas. Jesus in pajamas came at 3:16 one morning to a Denny's by the freeway in the ancient town of Dallas, where everything was frozen. There are many Denny's in Dallas, but few of them were chosen for Jesus in pajamas to finally have arisen. Jesus in pajamas came a shuffling to my table. "Help me if you can," a voice said. "Help him if you're able. Like a clown, like an angel, like a jester in Denny's palace. Couldn't say for sure, I only knew that it was Dallas, where the only whole heart is a broken one, and the only true love an unspoken one. So help him if you can, help him if you're able. When Jesus in pajamas is standing at your table. Jesus in pajamas had a coupon he was tearing. He was drooling slightly on the tattered clothing he was wearing. From underneath that dirty green knit cap, God's eyes were softly staring. Help me if you can, they said. Help me if you're able. But I turned my mortal gaze away and I got up from that table. I walked out past the door that just said, "Men." I left Jesus in pajamas on the cross again. And now the only whole heart is an aching one, and the only true love a forsaken one. So help him if you can, help him if you're able. Help him if you can, and God bless you, friend. The menu's in your hand.
Kinky Friedman. No longer.
Thank you very much.
No longer writing in the key of E. He doesn't have one anymore. All right, we have to take a break. We'll come back after this. All right, we are back. Happy Good Friday. You just heard a very interesting kind of Good Friday appropriate song from Kinky Friedman. He's here with us in the studio as part of The Nose today. He'll also be at Bridge Street Live in Collinsville tonight and tomorrow night. You can get tickets at 41bridgestreet.com. Also with us, this is so exciting. We have all these celebrities doing The Nose today. Melanie Kantaya is an actor, humorist, and author of Actor, Writer, Whatever, Essays on My Rise to the Top of the Bottom of the Entertainment Industry. And her most recent credits include HBO's The Night Of, which Rebecca and I both love a lot, and Marvel's The Defenders, streaming this summer on Netflix. Are you like a Marvel superhero now? Or?
No.
No?
No. And I can't, I signed a non-disclosure,
you can't say
okay.
so
I
don't,
can't
don't.
Say
we don't want to know.
Too much. It's not a big role.
Yeah. There are no small roles.
But it is with a star of quite some stature.
So you can't even say that? Like, you can't say anything.
You know, the funny thing is all the fan sites, they all know.
Right.
They all know exactly what's happening, but, you know, they're not legally bound not to say anything, so
well,
I can't.
Rebecca and I were both big fans of The Night Of, and I did think the entire time, so I'll tie this back to Kiki's song, that John Turturro was a Jesus figure. There was something very Christ-like about this guy. He's, you know, he's suffering terribly, and he's walking around in this kind of overcoat that almost looks like some kind of raiment from the Bible or something, and he's trying to fix other people.
He's a bit of a social leper.
He's really a social leper.
Whether he wants to or not,
right.
He just feels compelled to. Yeah,
he was so great.
And you like kicked somebody out of a school, heartless. I won't even say it.
Yeah.
I won't even say it. All right.
I did.
So we have some other things that we need to talk about here today. We have this kind of lightning round of possible topics here. I don't even really know which ones we should talk about. Although this is one that at least everybody can relate to. And I'm not sure everybody read this article, but some of us did. And I can summarize it for you. Anyway, in The New Yorker a week or two ago, Tad Friend, who's a terrific writer, did an article called Silicon Valley's Quest to Live Forever. He wasn't talking about the valley. He was talking about the people who live there. And all these people who who are big magnates at biotech firms and lots of movie stars who kind of hang around with them are really getting into the possibility. Well, to quote one of them, Martine Rothblatt, she's the founder of a biotech firm called United Therapeutics, which intends to grow new organs from people's DNA. Clearly, it is possible through technology to make death optional, she says. She's already commissioned a backup version of her wife, Bina, a mind clone robot named Bina 48. I'm not quite sure I know what a mind clone robot is or that I want to. But an Englishman named Aubrey de Grey, who's been on this show to talk about immortality, has proposed that he's part of this article too, if we fix seven types of physical damage, we will be on the path to living more than 1,000 years, assuming we can avoid getting hit by a bus or an asteroid. And so it's a philosophical question I pose to all of you. Kinky, would you want to live 1,000 years? Would you want to live 500 years?
Oh no, hell no. That's I always say that longevity has ruined as many men as it's made, and as many women. And a great example is Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
If Cosby would have just fallen off his perch before all this happened.
Yeah, but he was. It's only coming out now.
Right.
He was still a rapist back in the day when he was youthful.
He was, and you should also keep your eye on Assad and Bill O'Reilly to see what happens. Maybe they should step away at the right time, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, if, you know.
Yeah, well, his point anyway is he could have died in relative, you know, obscurity.
Oh, he would have been a hero.
Yeah.
He would have been an American hero.
Right.
It wouldn't have come out.
Of course, it
could be argued that maybe it's good that it came
wouldn't
out.
It would not come out.
So pointed out to me that I forgot to reintroduce Rebecca Castellani. It's not because I'm blinded.
I'm the regular person today.
Yeah,
I'm just going to keep the panel humble.
Yeah. Right. You're representing the rest of us.
Normalcy.
You're the only one who reads.
Yeah, right. She is the person who reads. Yeah, the other thing that I thought about, let me run this idea by you. Let's say that you could live for 500 years, except that you could get hit by a bus or an asteroid. To me, that starts to make, if you're committed to living 500 years, then you start to get much more nervous about
asteroids and buses.
Yeah,
and I've actually been hit by a bus, believe it or not.
And it's not as bad as people say it is.
No, right? it's but yeah, no thanks.
Yeah, you don't want to live 500 years?
No.
How about 200 years?
No. No, I will take the normal human lifespan. I would like not to physically suffer.
Right.
And I would like to not be a burden to my child.
Yeah.
Especially since she's an only child. Other than that, yeah, I'm fine.
I'm sorry I laughed when you said you'd been hit by a bus.
I laughed too. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, Woody Allen was asked, I think, by Mike Wallace, do you want to live on in the memories of your fans? And he said, no, I'd like to live on in my apartment. and so there's some people, I think, who never do want to die. But when that whole idea of, like, you get sort of protective of the 300 years that you've got or something, and then you don't want to do anything because what if you do get hit by a bus?
Yeah, I mean,
that would bother me.
If it's 300 years of anxiety, no thank you. And yeah. if it's 300 years of being, you know, in the body of a 90-year-old, no thank you. But if I was, you know, going to be in a 30-year-old body for an extra 100 years, I don't know.
Well, maybe you're all naturopathic now. You probably
will. Yeah,
I
feel like maybe I will. Who knows?
So you'd take an extra...
I wouldn't take like 1,000 years or 500 years, but I definitely deal with existential crises on a regular basis and a fear of the unknown after life. So I feel like having a little more time to see the world
that?
And do
getting
things.
Getting hit by a bus.
Yes, yeah. I feel like maybe that's what I need, just to get hit by a bus. And then
no
all
more
my perspective
crises.
Will shift back to the place.
Doing some workshops where they have the bus hit you. You kind of get over that,
Colin. You know, this state isn't it the home of Nathan Hale?
It is the home of Nathan
is.
Hale, yeah.
Which I was just thinking, we have so many heroes in Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the now legitimate, and most states don't have very many, mm-hmm. but Nathan Hale is one from mm-hmm. what I know of him that would not buy into this crap at all. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the people that are like this woman are the people that want to seem to be the most spiritually shallow. Of the bunch. I mean, the people we don't need to be around. The
yeah,
ones,
right.
The ones, when Nathan Hale, who was, 21 years old, or however old he was, what was he? He was a teacher, or he was
He had been a teacher. He had no training in espionage, didn't know how to be a spy, just volunteered for it. Died in total obscurity, too. I mean, nobody knew his name at that time.
I'll tell you who did know. When Nathan Hale, minutes before he was killed, said, I regret that I have but one life to give for my country, I think the British knew they were sunk.
Yeah.
And because you can't kill guys like that.
Right.
That's a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of guys are ready to go at age 21, yeah. regardless of. James Foley was another one, the journalist that his dad told him, don't go back over there. How can you? You know, and he's, why do you do this? And he said, why does a fireman run into a burning building?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then the narcissistic people want to live forever.
Yeah.
But Obama gave him such an eloquent eulogy, and 90 seconds later he was in the golf cart high-fiving Jay-Z or somebody. So not to knock Obama, because he's out now. He's not in. We get it. He's off the hook.
Mm-hmm. But your point, Melanie, is the people who give, and his point is the people who give and give of themselves, go fast.
Right.
Narcissistic people want to be.
But also my question is, if we're dealing with some of the most, you know, brilliant minds in science, you know, we still have juvenile diabetes.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we still have AIDS. We
cancer.
Still have cancers. We still have public policy issues of how to give everyone access to health care. Is this really, this just seems like, you know, when a movie star does like a silly movie as sort of a passion project, it feels like a really expensive passion project. Whereas it seems so surreal and so away from like everyone else's experience. Mm. Yeah. What can.
All right. We're going to switch topics here in the lightning round. And this is broke today. I didn't give anybody any time to get ready for this. But I have to bring it up because, in fact, somebody that Kinky and I both know is quoted about this. The estranged wife of former Congressman Anthony Weiner has been meeting with literary agents about her new project, which could detail her side of the sexting scandal and her role in Hillary Clinton's run. And that, of course, is Huma Abedin. She has been meeting with literary agents during the past few weeks to discuss a book envisioned as a reflection on how her personal and professional lives collided during the campaign. I think we all know what that means. but at least it says one top literary agent. See, Kinky and I have the same literary agent. The difference is that Kinky is productive, even though he doesn't even – even though he has a
Kinky's
typewriter.
Kinky's desperate, that's all.
I have a computer. I can type as many E's as I want, and I still don't get much done. But at least one top literary agent said she is definitely not in the Abaddon sweepstakes. No one would have approached me with this book because they know I'm not a Hillary fan. I'm an Obama fan, says ICM Partners Esther Newberg. This will be an interesting sale to see who wants to know what Wiener said to her each time he was caught. If she reveals a lot, it turns your stomach. If she doesn't, she puts the publisher in a bad place. To me, one of the questions about this, I mean, there are certain marriages where you do want, you wonder what people do say to each other, you know? Like how, I don't know how I could get through a day of that kind of thing with another person. So I don't know. In some ways, like you do want to know this, right? It's one of the basic human questions.
Yeah. I mean, it's like even in that film, the Wiener film, she played everything so close to the vest. Yeah. And she always like left and there was always this look. And there was this at the end of the movie where she was just like taking her vitamins.
She had a mask up the whole time.
Yeah, and she let it drop for like a nanosecond. So she's a fascinating person because you're like, you know, just they even look mismatched when you see them together. You know, she's got a sort of glamour to her, and she's very beautiful. And
although think about what you're saying because it kind of ties back to the thing we were just talking about.
Yeah.
She's fascinating because she's one of the few reticent people left on the public scene. She's one of the few people.
Right.
I mean, now somehow or other
and that's going to get blown when she writes the book.
Right. Somehow or other, she was part of an agreement to do that documentary, so she can't be quite that reticent. But yeah, you know, I mean, in some ways, like knowing things that you really want to know takes all the mystique and glamour.
Out of that person. I mean, I won't buy the book. I'll wait for the many think pieces that will come out.
Has Esther Lobster Newberg passed on the project?
Apparently she has once. She will not touch
I think she's very savvy. And Lobster, I hadn't done a book in a long time, you know, not that I mean, I wasn't really trending, you know, at the time I was trying to get a book deal. But my friend, Louis Kemp, who was Bob Dylan's childhood toboggan companion and closest friend, wanted to write this book. So Esther got the thing together, and it's now coming out in Random House. And the most amazing thing is this book, Louis Kemp has these stories, like Huck Finn, about him and Bob that are so crazy and outrageous and true. And of all the biographies, there have been hundreds of them about Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, what the world needs is another Bob Dylan book, I know. But the point is, none of them have any of these stories. These guys have never met Bob Dylan, these biographers, and they keep interviewing the same 250 people who say the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And we have something really different here, I think.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer Bob Dylan book, but it's
and
nonfiction.
And you left out toboggan, too.
The toboggan's got to be in there.
It's got to be in there when you describe the book. So, but that's another person who's kind of fundamentally unknowable, right? I mean, I mean, everybody else sooner or later just vomits up everything that they've ever thought or done. Or I mean, even Springsteen, you know, put out a book this year. But, I mean, the reason there's a market for a book like that one is because nobody knows anything about Bob. I'm talking to you.
The only autobiography I'm aware of Bob Dylan has done is Chronicles, which is about as discursive and far from what you would expect out of somebody's autobiography.
I think he's written two, but reading those books is no help at all.
It makes it more confusing. And I think that's part of what's led to Dylan's enduring appeal is that there is this continued mystique. I mean, just look at his behavior with the Nobel Prize. People cannot figure this guy out, even, you know, all these years after his celebrity is kind of, you know, diminished a little bit in the public eye. And I feel this way about Huma. I think what her appeal has been is that she is so hard to figure out what's going on in her real head. Like, what is this woman actually thinking? And I feel like a book is going to ruin that. And also, do we care now?
Yeah.
You know, is she going to go on to have a
you know, the quote that comes into my head when I think of Huma is always like Whoopi Goldberg and Ghost when she's like, Molly, you in danger, girl.
Yeah.
That's like run. You feel like you're watching that horror movie. It's like,
yeah.
No, it's
don't
in the
go
house,
down the stairs.
Man.
Yeah. Yep.
Would you guys see her as a victim? Because I think maybe she might be. Yeah. I mean, like the Clintons kind of got her in touch with Anthony.
I'll answer
your
question
play.
With a question. Do you think Hillary Clinton was a victim?
No, well,
of
they
Bill's
did set
infidelity?
Up their relationship.
I think it's the
right?
same thing because I read that they
I
met
think
and
that's
she
the
rejected
thing that...
him. She said no, 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 and then she was encouraged to go on a date with him by outside forces. So I think it's more of a Hillary Bill.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, you know who whose biography I do want to read is that woman who unseated her husband as governor.
Mm.
I want her biography.
Oh, you mean the new governor of Alabama?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Who was the person who's replacing Governor Bentley, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting story, too, because there's a personal and local tie-in, which is that when Governor Bentley, who was just impeached for things having to do with his relationship with a campaign aide named Rebecca Mason, he was defended by a Connecticut lawyer named Ross Garber. And the reason that Ross was called down there is because he'd handled the John Rowland impeachment up here.
Oh my.
So Ross is sort of the Better Call Saul of impeachment. You're going to get impeached. He's got billboards everywhere. If you're getting impeached, you better call Ross. Hey, Kinky, I think it might be time maybe for another song, if you would. I love the new version of Kinky, the contemplative.
Jesus in pajamas, yeah.
Meditative.
Okay, this is another one from
the Matlock album.
The Matlock collection, yeah. Matlock. Now this is me and my guitar. Met her in a pawn shop, took her down to the local bar, held her close to me, anyone could see. All I am is me and my guitar. People came to listen, some traveled from afar. They stood in line as if to find salvation in that bar. I told myself, there's just two things that got you where you are. All I am is me and my guitar. We traveled around this country, though she never had a name. Sometimes she was music, sometimes she was fame. Ah, but nothing lasts forever, like a steel string played too hard. And when it breaks, it sometimes takes your suitcase and your star. So I headed back down to the pawn shop, but I never got that far. I held her close to me, anyone could see. All I am is me and my guitar. We traveled around this country, though she never had a name. Sometimes she was music, sometimes she was fame. Now I play for all the people, dropping dollars in my jar. And all I am is me and my guitar. All I am is me and my guitar.
Kinky Friedman.
That was great.
It's the kinder, gentler Kinky.
Well, let's not go that far.
All right. Why don't we take a quick break? When we come back here, we might make some recommendations to you. If we have time, we'll slip in one more lightning round topic. We'll just see how things go after this. And Amy Goodman laughed at that joke. Okay, we're coming back right now in the middle of a story.
Who are you talking about?
Amy Goodman, she's, Kinky wouldn't know about
Democracy
Amy Goodman.
Democracy
Now. Nabahidaba.
Oh, she was a nice.
Nabahidaba.
So anyway, I made Amy Goodman laugh last night. The rest of you didn't get to hear the joke that made Amy Goodman laugh, but it was a clean joke, so I could tell it to you. But we're not going to right now. Right now we are visiting with our NOES panelists today, starting with Rebecca Castellani, scholar of modern literature and entertainment impresario of the glittering lights of Collinsville, where, in fact, Kinky Friedman plays tonight and tomorrow night at Bridge Street, Bridge Street Live in Collinsville. Tickets at 41bridgestreet.com. You can get them right now. Kinky's in our studio with us, too. He's also on the NOES, and so is Melanie Quintana, actor, humorist, author of Actor, Writer, Whatever, Essays on My Rise to the Top of the Bottom of the Entertainment Industry. And her most recent credits include HBO's The Night Of. And what was the other one? Limitless, right?
You were on Limitless? Limitless. I was on Limitless, yeah.
You said, this isn't sealed.
The seal, it's broken.
The seal is broken. Yeah. I misquoted you. And she's going to be Marvel's in The Defender. She can't tell you anything about it. Don't even ask her. She'll make you feel bad for asking her. had to sign all kinds of things about it. So what we'd like to do at this part of the show is make some recommendations for people, things people may or may not know about that they might also enjoy. So, Rebecca, show them how it's done.
All right, I will. I'm going to endorse a couple of artists I've been listening to this week, one I just discovered this week. I am going on my fourth year of being lucky enough to attend the Newport Folk Festival. I always find artists there I haven't heard of before, and they've just started releasing the lineups. So a new one for me is Nancy and Beth. This is brought to you by Megan Mullally and Stephanie Hunt, and the album actually doesn't come out until April, but you can hear a lot of the singles. Really funky, really cool, bluesy kind of duo thing. Some really satirical, funny songs.
Are they performing as Nancy and Beth?
Yes, Nancy and Beth at the Newport Folk Festival. I'm hoping for a Nick Offerman cameo. It would be great. Mm-hmm. So that was my one for this year that I'm looking forward to. And from last year, that got me thinking. One of my favorite sets from last year's Newport Folk Festival was Margot Price, who I've since gotten really into. So check out Nancy and Beth and Margot Price if you're listening into some the new. And, of course, come out to see Kinky tonight. You can purchase over the phone, too, but give me until 3 so I can get back to Collinsville, and then I can help you over the phone.
All right, yeah.
And we're going to do They Ain't Making Jews Like Jesus Anymore tonight.
You pretty
it's
much
Good
have
Friday.
To.
We have to.
Yeah, we have to.
You're going to have to do that. So, Melanie Quintana, would you like to? It doesn't have to be musical. It can be anything.
I'm going to endorse People of Earth, which is a TBS show with Wyatt Cenac. Everyone in my family had the stomach flu for New Year's except for me. And so I binge-watched it on New Year's Eve, and it was a quirky, weird, thoroughly entertaining show with really a great ensemble cast. I really like Wyatt Cenac in it. He's very dry and droll, and the premise is ridiculous, and the show is thoroughly entertaining. And in times like these, I think we can all use a little escapist entertainment.
All right. Yeah. Quickly the premise.
That people are, in fact, being abducted by aliens.
Okay, yeah. I want to watch that. I did love him on The Daily Show. So, Kiki, do you have anything you'd like to recommend to us?
Well, I will just say I'm so out of touch with the culture by this time that I don't know anybody that you're talking about, which is fine. I mean, but I will say this: Jesus loves you can be very comforting words. Mm-hmm. Unless you hear them in a Mexican prison.
All right. Okay. Not necessarily an endorsement. Okay, so I'm going to endorse a couple of things, and actually one of them maybe even there's a through line from what he just said. Every year for the last 2 years and now this year, I watch a series called American Crime. It's created by John Ridley, who's you know about this, and who, first of all, just is a brilliant guy anyway and has been involved with, like, 12 Years a Slave and stuff like that. And what he does with this series is really interesting. One of the things that he does is he has sort of a repertory group of actors who are mostly back every year. And probably the most important one of those is Felicity Huffman, who is just an incredible actor and has been the anchor of all three of these seasons. The seasons have nothing to do with one another. There's no overlap from cast to cast. In other words, Felicity Huffman has played three different, completely different roles in each of the three seasons, three utterly different looks. And Ridley just has this gift for creating television that really gets at stuff that's troubling in our society right now, but not in a way that's especially preachy. This is not going to sound particularly fun or appealing, but I mean this series has a lot to do with migrant labor and how immigrant labor is treated. It also has quite a bit to do with sex trafficking it doesn't really feel like you're not watching like NCIS or something. You're watching this really, really gritty, interesting, beautifully acted stuff. And Timothy Hutton is another guy who's, I think, think, been in all three seasons. And they have a bunch of actors who come back again and again, including some Latino actors who've been in, I think, all or most of the seasons. I can't recommend this enough. Every year I watch, like, the Emmys and the Golden Globes, and I think, why doesn't American Crime just get all of them, you know? They should just get all of these awards. But it doesn't. So anyway, I endorse it heartily. And then, very quickly, and then we might have time to talk about one more thing, too. Our friend Mike Pesca hosts a wonderful podcast called The Gist. You know about that. And he's been on our show a lot, and he's a great guy. He made this huge mistake, which is he was away yesterday. He may be away today, too. And he had Alexandra Petri guest host the show for him. Alexandra Petri is a young humor writer for The Washington Post. I will never have Alexandra Petri guest host my show because she's really funny. She did such a fabulous job hosting this show before, and I can guarantee you she's never done anything like this. We know Alexandra a little bit. And just go back and listen to it. She has an opening monologue where she talks about Steve Bannon and the meat temperatures at Mar-a-Lago and a whole bunch of other stuff. And,
yes.
And she goes from there to a terrific interview, and then she finishes up with she talks about Dr. Dow, the guy on the United Airlines plane, and about the fact that they always sort of dig up something bad about you, you know. So she's got all this stuff, and she kind of does a comparable thing to fit the Good Friday holiday. Like, what if they told that story, digging up the worst things that they could find? You know, I don't want to step on any of her jokes about this. But she just did such a great job, and for a guest host to come in and do this is, A, incredibly impressive, but, B, I would never let her guest host this show ever, not in a million years. I do, you know, because we have a composer here, a composer of songs here, I do want to just quickly, this is something that has kind of bothered me all week. We had this missile strike launched by the president against Syria. And, you know, the press kind of fell all over themselves talking about how this was the great thing and this is what really makes him a president. And we could debate all week about whether that was true or not. But there was one thing that kind of bothered me, and it was Brian Williams, who I actually defended a little bit in the past. Yeah, Brian Williams, who's watching these missiles go up, and here's what he said.
Go into greater detail. We see these beautiful pictures at night from the decks of these two U.S. Navy vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean. I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen, "I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons." And they are beautiful pictures of fearsome armaments making what is for them a brief flight over to this airfield. What did they hit? What are you convinced?
I don't know. Did you know Leonard Cohen at all?
I did.
Yeah. I just don't think Leonard Cohen would want his words.
Nope, yeah.
No, and my friend Ratzo in New York was very close to Leonard, and when Leonard died a few months ago, he called me, and he was kind of sobbing, and he said, "Kinky, Leonard died." Mm. And I said, "Leonard Skinner died?" That one's not for everybody.
Right.
But it's a...
But I mean, so much. I don't know. You knew where I was going with this right away, right?
I found that. I found it horrifying, actually. Yeah, like it was just almost. It's almost like there's so many things. There's so much to unpack here. Because first of all, you're not doing your job well as a journalist, where you're so, you know, your finger is so far from the pulse point of what is actually happening in the image and, like, how you're describing it and why you're describing these things and the aftermath. You're just so far away from your job, even. I found it really disconcerting.
There's the disconcertingness of that. But also, I just sort of feel like at the level of art, don't borrow the words of an artist.
First of all,
don't say... I am tempted to quote,
and then quote.
Yeah, right?
That semantically irritates me
really
very much.
Bad.
But yeah, I mean, to Leonard Cohen, Leonard Cohen is just passed away. Like, to not use his words in a way that would have, you know, jived with what Leonard Cohen was all about offends me. I'm just really not a big Brian Williams person. I really can't separate him from the idea that he's Marnie Michaels' father, and he behaves like a Marnie character.
She's a fictional character.
So, yeah, I'm not the biggest fan, and I think that was really out of line and inappropriate.
It didn't feel right to Leonard Cohen.
Does anybody care about it at all, though? I don't think they do. I mean, anybody besides us?
We care.
We care.
We care,
I'll tell you, Kiki, yes. They start using your lyrics to prove something that
My
they never
Facebook
said. I'll be
cares.
The first, but I'm going to get right up in their grills about that. All right, so we're going to stop here. It's been a very exciting day with Melanie Cantaya. We are very excited, even though we don't know why we're excited. We're excited that Marvel's The Defenders will be streaming this summer on Netflix. She'll be in at Kinky Friedman's, of course, at the Bridge Street Live in Collinsville tonight and tomorrow night. And there you will see Rebecca Castellani, and hopefully we'll see her back in the studios again soon. Thanks for tuning in today.
Avon Farmington, yeah, 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 yeah.